When we get into the month of June, summer safety is one of the things that, you know, I think everybody thinks of. Number one, because we get more people in town. There's more activities that are outdoors. There's less water and more heat and more potential for fire. So joining me now is Fire Marshal Tony Miller, Sosa Valley Fire and Rescue. Matt House, Division Chief of Operations for Western Lane Fire and EMS Authority. Good day to both of you.
Good day.
Hello.
So let's start, Tony, with you. Wildfire awareness was the month of May. Now, June, we get into things, and I know we had about 4 or 5 more inches of rain in May than we normally get, but that's not indicative of what we need to be aware of for as far as fire safety goes, is it?
No. I mean, across the state, we've been looking at the drought monitors, just kind of paying attention to it, you know, and there's a lot of factors that play into that. And we've had a significant amount of rain here in Florence, but that doesn't go the same across the state. And that can significantly change really fast with just a couple weeks of dry weather. So with that, you know, June coming up, fire restrictions are going to still probably play into effect for yard debris burning, and we're going to still see the same messages across the board that we see every summer kick off, and things pretty much aren't going to change much. I think we're going to see a higher emphasis on public education and just trying to get everybody aware that the fire season is here and it's upon us.
Well, let's start with one of the things we talked about before, and that's defensible space. I mean, it's a very important part of, you know, people being able to keep their homes safe if a fire approaches or that. And luckily, knock on wood, you know, we haven't had a major. We almost had one up the river, you know, a couple of years ago, which could have been potentially bad. But still, folks, we don't always think of this as a fire danger area, but that potential is always there, right?
Oh, yeah, that's correct. You can probably go outside your house right now and pick a bush and then just pull it up and reach underneath it, and you'll see how much dry debris is actually underneath that. And we call that fuel in our industry. I mean, you need those three parts in order for fire to exist. And fuel is one of the big ones. We got plenty of air around here, so fuel's the next one. So with that, we just need to add a component of an ignition source. So that could be anything. And so with that, even though we've seen a significant amount of rain here, you can figure that out real quick, that it's a little drier than we anticipated. And, you know, like you were saying, we talk about defensible space. You know, one of the things that I always have been really emphasizing lately is early recognition. And what I mean by that is to sign up for emergency alerts. I mean, there's plenty of places that you go on and you can actually get signed up for state, local emergency alerts. And that's very important, because early recognition, if you know that we're going to get a level 3 evacuation, you need to know that's going to happen and just not know by your neighbors coming in and letting you know. So if you can actually sign up for it, get the alert, you can sign up on our website, svfr.org. That actually, you can sign up for whether you want emails, phone messages, text messages, however you want to do it on a landline, whatever is a best avenue for you. So then I'll take a step back and talk about that defensible space. Most of the places that we have here are not larger pieces of property. We live rural. With that, you want to really target your 0 to 5 feet. And that's how I always say we eat that elephant, is we start small. We just look at clearing away any brush, or at least that 0 to 5 feet, get it away from your house. Try to put a non-combustible ground covering down so that if a fire is burning up towards your house, that it can actually put itself out before it even gets there. Make sure that you got 1/8-inch screening around your foundation vents, your gable vents, your attic vents. All that fun stuff are prime examples of what to do. Cleaning up the debris around your house. Blown in pine needles, blown in leaves. You can also look at putting non-combustible siding on your house and even roofing. If you're ever going to go and replace that, just look at the alternatives that are out on the market today. There's quite a bit.
I was going to ask you about that, because, you know, a lot of folks have older homes here, homes that maybe, you know, have dry rot involved in that, and they may want to look at doing something different. I imagine older homes like that that haven't had the care that maybe they should have do pose a fairly high risk when the fire approaches, right?
Of course, of course. Anytime that you, let's just use paint for an example. Around here, I've noticed that you need to paint your house about 5 to 10 years, every 5 to 10 years. If you have neglected that, that exposes natural wood that could be exposed to lower temperatures that could actually catch on fire. So those are one of the things that you can look at.
Now, those folks that have more of a land base around their things like dead trees and that, does that play into potential hazards there? I mean, as far as for fire goes, I mean, obviously for falling they would, but.
Well, you know, when we look at, we call it fuel in our industry because it's just something that can burn. And with that, there's always a potential risk for everything that's around us. Even if it's green, it can still ignite. It just is, takes a higher temperature or a longer exposure to that heat in order for it to light up. So with that, there's always a potential risk for anything that's around your place. And that's where, you know, that 0 to 5 feet, you move out to that 5 to 30 feet, start separating some trees, cleaning up some of the dead debris, separate some bushes so that they, you know, one of the things that you can remember or use as a rule of thumb is that whatever the height of that bush or tree is, you can figure 1.5 to 3 times the height of that is what your fuel flame lengths are going to be. So with that, if you want to look at our strong winds, you can do horizontally, vertically, that is all the same. So with that in mind, if you're doing separation from bushes, if you've got a 3-foot bush, you don't want anything within that 9 feet radius of that. So there's certain steps that you can actually take to help protect your home and stop a fire in its track. And it's been proven across the board. So
now, what about like businesses and residents that, you know, you hear every now and then about someone had a bucket of rags and they caught fire. I mean, how often does that kind of stuff happen? Is that a potential hazard, or do they have to be careful of what kind of cleaning solutions that they use, or is that more of a myth?
No, it's actually been tested and it actually has been proven. So with that, the conditions have to be just right. Humidity, temperature outside. Also, if you seal the container up, there are certain things that you kind of want to watch out for. Mineral spirits, one of them, you know, linseed oils, all those kind of fun things are the things that you want to watch out for. And if you're going to be storing them, put them in a bag and put them outside away from something that can catch on fire and let them air out. That's really the big key of it, is just properly storing them.
But are they safe in the containers themselves without anything? I mean, if they're sealed and closed, and are they fairly safe in that environment?
Oh, of course. Yes, yes. When you buy something off of the store, right, out of the store, it's one of those things that you're getting it in a safe containment, right? So anytime that you change that containment, that's where there's a potential risk. So if you're soaking a rag, those are kind of the things that you're looking at. And if the temperature's just right, like I said, humidity's just right, contain those vapors, it could ignite. It's rare, but it does happen.
Any other kind of fire safety tips you can throw out there for folks that are listening that, you know, may not be familiar with how to keep things from burning on them?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we want to watch is you really want to pay attention to fire restriction seasons, right? So we're going into camping season. People want to have campfires, want to cook, do those kind of things. Just pay attention to the restrictions in the areas that you're at. And they change based on region. So if you're going to go east, those fire restrictions are going to probably go into effect sooner than they would out here in our coastal range. So that's one of my big suggestions. Just kind of pay attention to that. Watch those fire restrictions and just adhere to them, because it could be the matter of whether you catch something on fire and burn some stuff down that you didn't intend to do.
Obviously, one of the other safety issues that we have was it's probably year round because, you know, you always see them on the dunes no matter what time of year it is. That's probably a big issue. The more people out there, then there's traffic. Talk a little bit about safety issues, some of the things that you see on a regular basis from, say, the ambulance district perspective.
Definitely. With the influx of population to our area, we definitely will have more incidents revolving around summer safety. I break it down in different categories. We have beach safety, trail safety, traveling and general safety, and then also water safety. Those categories, when we talk about beach safety, the biggest thing with beach safety is know your environment. Don't ever turn your back against the ocean. The ocean doesn't have any kind of mindset. It's going to do what it's going to do. And we see a lot of injuries because of sneaker waves coming up because somebody turned their back onto it versus being aware of the situation. So that is the big one on the beach. And also,
or somebody climbs on the rocks.
Which goes to trail.
Yeah, right? Up north, and like, oh my goodness, what are you doing?
Yeah,
and then they take videos of it.
Yeah, and there's adventurous people out there that like to kind of go off the trail. Stay on the trails. Trails are there for your safety, for that reason alone. know your capacity to, meaning if you're going to go walk a trail, know your limitations, what you can and cannot do. Sometimes during the summer, we do have an increase of calls out on the trails because somebody may be a little bit more short of breath, unable to walk like they thought they could 4 or 5 years ago, and they came out to visit again, and then we come out and help them, which we're always there. But if, and what the saying is, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of gold. If we can prevent this, it's only going to be better for all the way around. And then travel in general safety, we've seen a pretty significant increase of accidents on 101, 126, and some of it can be prevented by just good driving etiquettes, and some of it is out of our control. But if defensive driving is always the best thing to do, having your head on a swivel, watching for people doing things that they shouldn't be doing, would be like passing on a double yellow, speeding, passing on the corners. Some of this stuff is happening now. I know that police has been more present out on the highways, which is great, and that'll help mitigate some of it. But still, you know, defensive driving is always the best course of action when we talk about traveling safety. And then water.
Well, before you get to travel, before you leave travel safety, one thing that happened I saw just the other day was somebody had pulled off the side of the road to have a conversation with somebody right in a right-hand turn lane, and caused a truck that wanted to turn to stop short on traffic and almost caused a three-car crash on there. What about, I mean, is there some way, I mean, is there somebody to call when something like that happens to you? Or are those people just being dumb and not really paying attention to where they're
parked? Well, I won't address their mental capacities by any means, but there definitely is some, and I think defensive driving is always the best suggestion to that. That, you know, if you see somebody that's not playing within the normal rules, as long as you're playing by the rules, you're generally going to be okay in that safety paradigm. You know, and there are people do amazing things. And when we train our newer firefighter and EMS providers, we train them to know to expect the unexpected from our drivers out in the community when we're driving in an emergency response. That's really kind of what I've even been telling my family and my wife when we're, you know, traveling locally. Just expect the unexpected and to be defensive driving. It's a different time right now with people mm-hmm. driving.
Well, like you said, having your head on a swivel, always being aware, you know, you're not just driving down the road, you know, thinking about what you're going to have for lunch. I mean, you got to pay attention, especially when you're doing, you know, 55 miles an hour on 126 and somebody else isn't paying attention to what they're doing.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and there's technology that plays into it as well that people like to use when they're driving. We encourage never to use any technology. I'm torn with your analogy. The guy pulled off on the side of the road to use it. That was good for him, but he always wanted to do it.
No. They were pulled off out of the car talking to each other.
Oh, yeah.
I could not believe it. You know, it's like crazy.
Again, you want to expect the unexpected in these mm-hmm. situations, and unfortunately, that's what we have to do and be a head on the swivel and being the best defensive person you can be. And I think that is true with all of safety, is you're looking out for the unexpected, yeah. Especially if you turn your back to the ocean like we talk about. That's an unexpected.
Well, and technology can also include McDonald's or Burger King, too, you know, if you're trying to eat your lunch while you're driving down the road. So anyway, so you had another area, too.
Just water safety. During the summer, we have an influx of people that come in and use our lakes for water, and so yeah, make sure people are doing it safely with their personal safety flotation devices. And then also with all these things, these topics that we're hitting, is never you mix alcohol with it. Be smart. You know, there's always a place and a time for alcohol, and it's generally back at the campfire relaxing afterwards, but never in these times. I won't hit on the ATVs. That's another beast on itself.
Yeah, and again, it's, you know, one of those things. I know how you feel about motorcycles the same way. It's like those are accidents waiting to happen, you know, especially when other drivers don't always see you when you're driving down the road there. So it's even more important to be. Talk a little bit about how does a person, if they get in trouble, is 911 the best way to get help?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 911 is a well-recognized number in the United States for in need, call it. And it's people do a great job still to this day calling 911 when there's a situation that's out of their normal emergency handling environment. And that's when we come in and we'll handle the emergency and move on to the next one.
And then also people talk about, you know, this weather and this temperature we have up here, wanting to take a dip in the ocean, probably don't realize how fast they can succumb to hypothermia.
Yeah, the body will cool itself 240 times when it's wet faster. So having our general ambient water temperature here is about 48 to 52 degrees. That is cold. That is very cold. Even a lot of our experienced divers, they use dry suits just because they know it's that cold when they go out there. And then when we do have warmer temperatures, people will go out there. But just remembering that those temperatures are colder, we also have the wind that plays into it during the summer. We all know we get the northwest winds that blow anywhere between 30 to 50 miles per hour during a beautiful day. That'll cool your body off as well if you're wet.
Now, I know that this is a no-brainer for most people out there, but just explain again, when you're on an interstate or when you're on a highway or road and emergency vehicles come either behind you or in front of you, what is the proper procedure for people that are driving?
You say it's a no-brainer, but we experience it every emergency response. Back to what I was saying, that we train our people to expect the unexpected. Yeah, nothing has changed in the law. It is still pull over slowly to the right and allow. We're asking for the right of way. We're never going to plow somebody off the road to get to emergency. So if you see lights and sirens, if you see lights, you hear sirens, the best thing is to slowly pull off to the shoulder in a safe area so we can get by to the emergency that we're going to. If it's a corner, we never say pull over on a corner. Go to the next straight shot that you can that has an area to safely pull over. In fact, a lot of times if we come up behind a vehicle on 126, Highway 36, or on 101, we will slow down, intentionally even turn off our sirens and lights because of the corners, because we don't want an unsafe action to happen. Pulling to the right is absolutely still the correct thing to do.
Now, lastly, what about coming up upon an accident with emergency vehicles in place? What's the proper procedure? I know everyone wants to look.
Yeah, and looking is fine. What they call them, looky lures.
Yeah,
looky lures. In California, I actually believe, actually instituted a law that if they were caught doing it, they would get fined. Oregon does not have such law that I'm aware of. We see it all the time on scene, and I encourage them, hey, put your device, drive safely, keep going where you're going. The best thing to do is we will always establish a safety corridor around the incident, meaning depending on how bad the incident is or how big the incident is, it can be 100 yards from the incident up to a quarter mile to a mile from the incident. That safety corridor is to protect the responders and the patients that are inside of that. We're trying to also prevent what we call secondary accidents as well. So having enough time notice to slow down properly so you don't cause a secondary accident is always, again, back to paying attention, head on a swivel, being observant to what's going on is a huge key to what's could mitigate that problem.
And again, we're calling this summer safety, but this is pretty much full time, whether it's fire, whether it's, you know, personal safety. This is something that's year round, not just for the summertime.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about it now just because we have such an influx of people in town. We want our community to be aware of that. Our little sleepy town goes from 20,000 roughly up to 30,000 on any given day.
Fire Marshal Tony Miller and Matt House, Division Chief of Operations. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that wraps up our June edition of Our Town. Stay tuned for next month. We'll have a whole host of new interviews with folks around town. And who knows, maybe out of town.